Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Leo Lombardini. I'm a professor at Texas A&M University, and I'm also the director of the Center for Coffee Research and Education. It's a new center that was established about a year ago. So I put together this workshop, first of all, because the location is very appropriate. I hope you had the chance to drink some delicious Kona coffee. I had. And so I gather a few colleagues and someone that I had just met. So I'm very excited about this opportunity to tell you a little bit about history. I was asked by ASHS to introduce, to include a little bit of history about coffee, but also a little bit of more recent scientific development about this very important crop. So obviously coffee belongs to the Coffea. Coffea genus, which is part of the Rubiaceae family. This is a family that was recently enlarged because through in-depth research, and that's the citation right there if you're interested, the former genus Silanthus actually is now part of the Coffea. It was kind of a reorganized the phylogeny of the species. Of the genus. So right now, if I'm not incorrect, there's 124 species, and interestingly, they're all diploid and strictly allogamous, except one. And of course, the one that is a little bit of a different situation is Coffea arabica. This is the only self-fertile allotetraploid. So it has two sets of chromosomes, 44 chromosomes, and it's now almost certain that Arabica is actually a fairly recent product of a love story between Coffea canephora and Coffea eugenioides. This is believed to have happened between 10 and 50,000 years ago. And so you have these two parents which crossed, which is a quite rare event, and I'll tell you also why. They crossed, not only they crossed, but their offspring was a tetraploid seed, and we believe that that was the first Coffea arabica. It's almost certain that this was limited to a very, very small geographical region, so it's possible there was a single event that really gave us this very important crop today. Where did this happen? It happened in the western highland of Ethiopia. And you see a picture right there. This is obviously we're talking about a tropical region covered with the vegetation, frequently also covered by clouds. So it's a kind of like a cloud forest. And this is where most likely it's believed that it happened. Okay. However, if you look at the distribution, the current distribution of Robusta, which is Coffea canephora, one of the two alleged parents, and eugenioides, which is here, you understand that this is the only area where the two species today overlap. So it would be the logical place for Arabica to be present. However, if you look at the top right, you see that the current distribution of Arabica is a little bit separated. There's a geographical separation there. So we don't really know if that's because the current distribution of the two parents is different from what it was 20, 30, whenever that happened, or if the Arabica distribution is different now than what it was before. It could be climate change. Definitely deforestation may have played a role, because this is a pretty heavily populated part of the world. So anyway, another reason why the event, that cross, was a bit unusual is because the two species have a pretty different ecological characteristics. Canephora is usually found in the lowlands, in the plains of the tropical Africa, of Central and Western Africa. Instead, eugenioides is found in the higher altitude, higher locations, higher altitudes. So obviously that's also makes the event even more rare. But nonetheless, it happened, and we definitely have to help whatever favor that cross. Now, how do we go from the Western Highlands of Ethiopia to the rest of the world, because obviously coffee nowadays is grown in pretty much all tropical countries. I circle Yemen next to Ethiopia, because Yemen played a very important role in the distribution of Arabica around the world. We don't know exactly when, but somewhere between 500 AD and probably 800, 900 AD, coffee crossed the Red Sea. The strait is very narrow, it's just a few miles, and so obviously there's always been trade between the two regions, and coffee became one of those commodities that was traded. Soon after it made it to Yemen, the Yemenis started using it. Okay, we don't know how long it took for them to actually start brewing it and turn into a drink. If you talk to both Ethiopians and Yemeni, they'll tell you legends. But those are legends. We don't really know how they happened. This is a picture of Yemen. Okay, it looks very different from the picture of the Western Highlands of Ethiopia. And this is why Yemen played a very important role, because for several hundreds of years, Yemen started growing coffee in a dry, full sunshine place. Okay, and this is, if we go back to the map, obviously Yemen is the southern tip of the Arabic Peninsula. It was really the Arabian, together with the Yemeni, that probably started using this crop to turn into a drink. And this is actually why it's called Café Arabica, okay? It should have been Café Ethiopica. But because that's how the Europeans came to know coffee, through the Turks and then the Venetians and all the other, the Dutch, the French, that started kind of traveling in that region. So at first it was hard to get coffee out of Yemen and in the Arabic Peninsula, because those guys always boiled the seeds before trading them, because obviously they had already understood the importance of coffee as one of their own. Nonetheless, a few were able to smuggle seeds out of Yemen and Arabic Peninsula, and that's when coffee started its journey around the world. You probably cannot read here, but I'll tell you what it says. The Dutch in the mid-1600s started taking it first to Ceylon, now Sri Lanka, and then to Indonesia, Java, obviously. We still refer to a cup of Java, and that's one of the reasons. It's not native to Java. And then from there, actually, coffee traveled back to Europe when it was first planted in botanical gardens in Amsterdam and then Paris. The French were very powerful at that time as a maritime power, they started also taking seeds out of Yemen, and they took them to the Isle of Bourbon, which is now Reunion, which was one of their colonies. And then from there, he actually went back to Kenya, went back to Africa, and also he started traveling back to down to South America. It wasn't until mid-1700, early 1700, that coffee arrived to Central America, to the Martinique was the first place where coffee was planted, and eventually to South America as well. Okay, so a long, long journey that had a tremendous impact on the varieties that are available today, and also on the breeding effort, okay? Because some seeds were coming from Indonesia, they were of Yemeni origin. Some were coming from Bourbon, also of Yemeni origin, most likely. So there, if you look at this tree, you can see the Arabica is right here, okay? And actually it shows the cross, the original cross between the two parents. And you see that you have Yemeni accessions. So you have the Tipicas, they're the ones that came from Indonesia, and then you have the series of the Bourbons, okay? So a lot of the current varieties that we have today still derive from this two original, not original location, but the first locations out of Yemen, okay? And remember, this was all coming out of just a handful of seeds that were leaving Yemen. Not only that, but also because Arabica is a self-fertile species, obviously that did not favor the genetic crossing, okay, and shaking up a little bit of things here and there. And that's actually what you're going to hear about in the following talks. So there are a few selections that we have today. They actually come directly from the wild types from Ethiopia, okay? Some of them, for example, geisha is one of the most expensive coffees in the world that sometimes reaches a couple hundred dollars a pound. You can buy it on the internet, and it's grown mainly in Central America, but also other parts of the world, and it's originated from a region of Ethiopia directly. So Arabica, obviously, is the most important species, and that's the first one that was actually cultivated extensively around the world. But we don't want to forget Robusta, Caffea Canephora, which, remember, was one of the two alleged parents of Arabica. So here are the differences in the origin, okay, Ethiopia for Arabica, and I put Yemen in parentheses, and Canephora, remember, is the lowlands of Central Africa. The first cultivated species is Arabica. Robusta joined the commercial production a lot later, actually, in the late 1800s. Arabica is grown all over the tropics, whereas Robusta, there are certain countries, Brazil, Vietnam, and mainly Western African countries produce Robusta. Arabica inherited the preference for high altitude from one of the parents, from Eugenioides, because it's typically grown at high altitude, between 700, 1800 meters, sometimes up to 2000, right around the equator. Robusta is a low altitude crop. The quality of Arabica is way superior, okay? And this is obviously, I'm sure if you've bought coffee, you always try to see the one that says 100% Arabica. Robusta, you cannot drink pure Robusta coffee. It's very bitter and low grade, and however, it has a higher caffeine content. And it's frequently used for blends, cheaper blends, but sometimes also instant coffee. It's commonly used, but rarely as, again, pure, okay? Arabica represents about 60% of the world production. Robusta is about 40%. So one of the reasons why we're here is because the future of Arabica is a risk. I listed there a lot of the threats that the species is facing. You go from being very sensitive to the climate, in particular the temperature, okay? Low genetic diversity, which goes back to, obviously, to the way we got Arabica around the world, but also to the fact that it's self-fertile. Deforestation, pressure from pest and disease, they keep coming. Something that just was published a couple of weeks ago, they projected the frequency of pollinators for Arabica in the next few decades, and they saw a tremendous dip due to climate change. So there's a lot of, not to mention the economics of coffee, a lot of farmers are smallholder farmers, and obviously they rely on coffee for their subsistence, but sometimes it's a hard living. And if things don't go right, they prefer to give up their land and sometimes migrate and maybe move to the United States. This is what the effect of climate change is going to do to Arabica cultivation in Brazil. We're talking about 2050. This is now, you know, science fiction. It's just a few decades down the road. This recent study, actually, they did this for all producing countries. I just put Brazil because it's the largest producer of coffee around the world. But you see a tremendous shrinkage, okay? The different colors represent the different ecological zones where coffee is grown. And if you actually translate those different ecological zones, this is today and this is in 2050, you see how much bigger the unsuitable regions are for Arabica cultivation. Coffee leaf rust is the biggest threat the industry faces. Luckily, this is a disease that is not present in Hawaii yet. Hopefully, it will never come. But it's a disease that it was introduced accidentally from Africa, where coffee is from, and it is now present in all producing countries, okay, except, again, Hawaii. It attacks the leaves and it causes severe defoliation, as you can see here. And this is how you have to do what you have to do to keep the crop. I actually took that picture in Guatemala last year. So coffee berry borer. This is a small beetle that reproduces or lays the egg inside the developing berry, and it arrived in Hawaii in 2010. And I actually took this picture just a couple of days ago, right here in Hawaii. And actually, the white spot that you see, it's a fungus, the Bovaria bossiana, that is used for biological control. So in that case, the beetle is there under the white coating, for parasitized by the fungus. Climatic extreme, this is a picture taken in Brazil 3 years ago, severe drought. Central America and other tropical countries faces cyclones, hurricanes. Actually, Puerto Rico is being hit as we speak, and I was already told that their coffee crop is gone because of Irma that was there just a couple of weeks ago. This is the effect of the reduction of pollinators. You see here where it's brown, it's a reduction, a change in number of bee species, minus 5, minus 3, minus 21. So the bees, a lot of the bees are going to disappear for climate change, okay? The economic impact of coffee is huge. This is just for the United States alone. Look at the value of the United States, that this commodity, even though we grow a very little fraction in the United States, but nonetheless, we are the largest importer of coffee around the world. So this is one of the answers that I give when people ask me, why do you work on coffee? You know, coffee doesn't grow in Texas. Yes, but, you know, there's a lot of people that depend on coffee for their livelihood here and abroad. And it's a great tool for actually development, agricultural development in around the world. So here's the workshop lined up. The first one is Chifumi Nagai, who's a coffee breeder here from Hawaii Agriculture Research Center. Then we're going to have Patricia Klein from Texas A&M University to talk about a recent study on the genetic diversity of Arabica coffee. And then Manuel Hatzakis talk about the chemistry of different coffee Arabica beans. We're going to talk about IPM. Andrea Kawawata from here Hawaii Extension is going to tell us a little bit of her updates. And last but not least, a PhD student, Craig Bakeman from University of Florida, will talk about their work in Papua New Guinea to prevent coffee berry borer, which is the little guy that we talked about. So thanks again for sticking around, and Chifumi, this podium is yours.